Okay, welcome once again to another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. I'm your host, Captain Kevin Smith, and it's good to be here. Now, a few administrative items. You can find our podcast each week on our website, and the website is throttleupradio.com, as well as iTunes. It is available there on iTunes. You can go to my website, and you can find podcasts that we have produced, and we have placed there on the website in its proper place. This goes back quite a number of years, actually, 4 or 5 years of podcast, and I'd like to point out that we do from time to time we do these special editions, which are designed to focus our attention on certain things that we think are particularly important. It could be any number of reasons for their importance, but we do that, and we are in the midst of a long-running special edition. Right now, the special edition is based upon the theory of truth and the theory of knowledge. Those are the key aspects, and then we are looking at what we call the truth algorithm. Is it possible for us to determine if something that claims to be true is in fact true without having access to all of the data, if you will, without having access to all of the information? Because, and this is a very, very good reason for this, it's not really well understood, but I want to emphasize this. Because we live in a world that is often complex and uncertain, there's a certain amount of uncertainty to our existence. Everything is not completely determined. Those who think that we live in a deterministic environment, in a deterministic reality, are quickly becoming in the minority, because more and more thinkers and more researchers are recognizing that we do actually live in a aspect of reality that contains a certain level of uncertainty, and often the uncertainty is fairly high. So when we encounter situations that are complex and uncertain, do we give up? Do we stop thinking? Or do we shift into a different mode or a different gear? Do we have a transmission that has multiple gears, mental transmission in this case? Do we have that, and are we able to shift into a mode that allows us to continue to think during periods of time where uncertainty prevails and where we actually don't have all of the information that we would like to have? My position is that we don't stop thinking. We continue to think, we continue to examine, we continue to explore, we continue to exercise our critical thinking skills. That's my position. It's not a very well-embraced position. It's not particularly popular. I tend to be an outlier. I tend to be a person that thinks outside the box, and I am most certainly am a non-conventional thinker. Okay, the truth algorithm. We are in the midst of this special edition, the truth algorithm. And what are we trying to get at? Well, we're basically what we're doing here is we're saying, well, we are not going to give up our thinking. We are self-actualized people, self-actualized thinkers. We are not going to relinquish our sovereignty and hand over our thinking to somebody else. We are going to do our own thinking for us. Thank you very much. And that ought to be our mantra. That ought to be the way we begin our day. After we say our daily prayers, we should recognize the fact that we have the capacity, we have the ability to think for ourselves. Recall, if you have read my book, Critical Thinking Essentials, Quick Reference Handbook, I recall how it starts out. It basically starts out with this phrase, or this assertion, rather, that says that what's most important in life is not what you think, but how you think. How should we think about things where we do not have all of the information? We have only some of it. Now, the key to this show is this. As we explore and examine our thinking algorithm, and we've gone through a number of steps. Last week we discussed in some measure of detail, we discussed focus, whether or not something has been given to us to divert our attention or to prevent us from focusing in on what is actually real. Or the what we say in our critical thinking handbook is clarify the actual, what is real. Okay. Here we're going to be looking at a bit of a broader question here as we continue to work our way through this algorithm. And the broader question here that we need to consider, and this could be one of the branches that exists in this algorithm, is the truth knowable? And so that's what we're going to get into today. Is the truth knowable? Can we even know the truth? Is it even possible to know if something is true or not, given the situation and circumstances? Okay. A lot of people would say that if we are not given enough information, we can't know something. Okay. I guess I would say that's fine as far as it goes, maybe. I don't actually fundamentally believe that. And that's where I'm different. That's where my thinking process diverges away from mainstream thought, from conventional thinking. I do believe that we can know something if something is real, if something is true. We can know it. There are ways in which we can know something without having access to all of the data and to all of the facts. What is that? We talked about that before. And a lot of it is intuition, innovation, creativity. We have a lot of resources with us. And we talked about how we can look at things from an objective and a critical thinking standpoint. And we can consider such things like, is it congruent, which basically is a fancy mathematical term, which means does it follow? Is it consistent with? Is it contained within a larger mental model? Okay, obviously we have to create the mental model first, but is it contained within that mental model? And is it possible for us to develop a feel for whether or not this assertion, which is being claimed to be true, is in fact true? Okay, now what I'm going to do here is I'm going to jump right into this thing with both feet, and I'm going to read something that I think is pretty important for all of us as we consider our current situation in this world, the current situation that we have going on in this post-pandemic world, under this new administration, and all kinds of things that are going on in this world. It's very, very confusing to all of us. And so, fundamentally, are we able to determine the truth? Are we actually seekers of the truth? Are we truth seekers, and are we critical thinkers? A critical thinker is one in which they or he or she wants to understand what is actually going on. We cannot think critically unless we have a clear understanding of the reality of the moment and the reality of our existence. We cannot understand it without knowing what is real and what is true. This is a Twitter feed. This actually has gone viral. I am going to use it because I think it is, in fact, important, and it does speak to our show and our series and what we are trying to do here in terms of our ability to think critically and our ability to come to grips with actually what is going on, and therefore what we should be doing once we understand what is going on. Do we understand what is actually happening, and can we determine if what is being told to us is in fact true or it is not true? And that is our job. Recall that if we are serious about being able to think critically and understand the truth, we really need to get serious as a nation about critical thinking. I have often said that if you know how to think critically, then teach it to others. If you don't, then learn. If you are listening to this show, obviously, you would like to learn something about critical thinking, or at least like to affirm the fact that you are, in fact, a proficient critical thinker. And that's okay. There are a lot of great thinkers out there. I try to be the best critical thinker that I possibly can be. I am still learning, as hopefully as most of us are. This is a Twitter feed. It's rather lengthy, but I think it is important for us to go through it and try to understand it. And here we are trying to nail down the truth. In this Twitter feed, this is by somebody else, is doing, is taking an effort to nail down what is actually true, what is actually going on, not what others would like us to believe. Okay, this is from Martyr Maid. It's on Twitter. It's like I said, it's it's going, has gone viral. Many, many people are passing it around. It starts off this way. I think I've had discussions with enough boomer tier Trump supporters who believe the 2020 election was fraudulent to extract a general theory about their perspective. Most believe some or all of the theories involving midnight ballots, voting machines, etc., but you find when you talk to them is that while they will defend those positions with info they got from Hannity or Breitbart or others, they're not particularly attached to them. Here are the facts, actual confirmed facts that shape their perspective. One, the FBI, etc., spied on the 2016 Trump campaign using evidence manufactured by the Clinton campaign. We now know that all involved knew it was fake from day one. These are Tea Party people, the types who give their kids a pocket constitution for their birthday and have founding fathers' memes in their bios. The intel community spying on a presidential campaign using fake evidence is a big deal to them. Everyone involved lied about their involvement as long as they could. We only learned the DNC paid for the manufactured evidence because of a court order. Comey denied on TV knowing the DNC paid for it when we have emails from a year earlier proving that was true. This was true with everyone from CIA Director Brennan and Adam Schiff, who were on TV saying they'd seen clear evidence of collusion with Russia while admitting under oath behind closed doors that they hadn't, all the way down the line. In the end, we learned that it was all fake. At first, many Trump people were worried there must be some collusion because every media and intel agency wouldn't make it up out of nothing, when it was clear that they had made it up. People expected a reckoning and shed many illusions about their government when it didn't happen. We know as a fact, A, the Steele dossier was the sole evidence used to justify spying on Trump campaign. B, the FBI knew the Steele dossier was a DNC op. C, Steele sources told the FBI the info was unserious. D, they did not inform the court of any of this and kept spying. Trump supporters know the collusion case front and back. They went from worrying the collusion must be real to suspecting it might be fake to realizing it was a scam, then watching as every institution, agencies, the press, Congress, academia, gaslit them for another year. Worse, collusion was used to scare people away from working in the administration. They knew their entire lives would be investigated. This is where people whose political identity was largely defined by a naive belief in what they learned in civics class began to see the outlines of a regime that crossed all institutional boundaries because it had stepped out of the shadows to unite against an interloper. GOP propaganda still has many of them thinking in terms of partisan binaries, but a lot of Trump supporters see that the regime is not partisan. They all know that the same institutions would have taken opposite sides if it was a Tulsi Gabbard versus Jeb Bush election. It's hard to describe to people on the left who are used to thinking of government as a conspiracy, Watergate, and WMD, etc., how shocking and disillusioning this was for people who encouraged their sons to enlist in the army and hate people who don't stand for the anthem. They could have managed the shock if it only involved the government, but the behavior of the corporate press is really what radicalized them. They hate journalists more than they hate any politician or government official because they feel most betrayed by them. The idea that the press is driven by ratings, sensationalism became untenable. If that were true, they'd be all over the Epstein story. The corporate press is a propaganda arm of the regime. They now see an outline. Nothing anyone says will ever make them unsee that, period. This is profoundly disorienting. Many of them don't know for certain whether the ballots were fake in November 2020 election, but they know for absolute certain that the press, the FBI, etc., would lie to them if there was. They have every reason to believe that, and it's probably true. They watch the press behave like animals for 4 years. Tens of millions of people will always see Kavanaugh as a gang rapist based on nothing because of CNN. And CNN seems to be proud of that. They led a lynch mob against a high school kid. They cheered on summer of riots. They always claimed the media had liberal bias, fine, whatever. They still thought the press would admit truth if they were cornered. Now they don't. It's a different thing to watch them invent stories whole cloth in order to destroy regular lives and spark mass violence. I will say parenthetically, that's why we're doing this radio show and series, and that's why we're emphasizing critical thinking, because we are being fed often a pack of lies. We need to be able to understand that and deal with it and deflect it away from our consciousness. I will continue. Time Mag told us that during the 2020 riots, there were weekly conference calls involving, among others, leaders of the protest, the local officials who refused to stop them, and media people who framed them for political effect. In Ukraine, we call that a color revolution. Throughout the summer, Democratic governors took advantage of the COVID to change voting procedures. It wasn't just the mail-ins. They lowered signature matching standards, etc. After the collusion scam, the fake impeachment, Trump people expected shenanigans by now. As a case in point, fake impeachment. We know now that Trump's request for Ukraine to cooperate with the DOJ regarding Biden's money activities in Ukraine was in support of an active investigation being pursued by the FBI and Ukraine at the time, and so completely legitimate. Then you get the Hunter laptop scandal. Big tech ran a full-on censorship campaign against a major newspaper to protect a political candidate, period. Everybody knows it. Goes without saying, but if the New York Times had Don Jr.'s laptop full of pics of him smoking crack and other things, they would have acted differently. Think back. Stories about Trump being compromised by Russian prostitutes and blackmailed by Putin were promoted as facts. Excuse me. And the only evidence was a document paid for by his opposition. All right, parenthetically, keep that in mind. Something that is being promoted as being the truth with no evidence whatsoever. Okay, keep that in mind. This is very, very important to understand. I will continue. The reaction of the Trump people to all of this was not no fair. That's how they felt about Romney's binders of women. This is different. Now they see correctly that every institution is captured by people who will use any means to exclude them from the political process. And yet they showed up in record numbers to vote. Trump got 13 million more votes than in 2016. Over the ensuing weeks, they got shuffled around by grifters and media scam artists selling them conspiracy theories. They latched onto one, then another increasingly absurd theory as they tried to put a concrete name on something very real. Media and tech did everything to make things worse. Everything about the election was strange. The change to procedures, unprecedented mail-in voting, the delays. But rather than admit that and make everything transparent, they banned discussions on it. Everybody knows, just as Don Jr.'s laptop would have been the story of the century, if everything about the election dispute was the same, except the parties were reversed, suspicion about the outcome would have been taken very seriously. Even the courts refused the case. Refusal of the case gets nowhere with them because of how the opposition embraced mass political violence. It's a fact, according to Time magazine, that mass riots were planned in cities across the country if Trump won. Forget the ballot conspiracies. It's a fact that governors used COVID to unconstitutionally alter election procedures to help Biden to make up for a massive enthusiasm gap by gaming the mail-in ballot system. Okay, now, parenthetically, it's a fact. Okay, we know certain things to be true, not glommed over, glossed over, or ignored. We know certain things to be true. Keep that in mind as we go through this. Let me continue. They knew it was unconstitutional to change these voting rights laws. It's right there in plain English. All right, so something was done that was out of bounds. Keep that in mind. I will continue. The entrenched bureaucracy and security state subverted Trump from day one. The press is part of the operation. Election rules were changed. Big tech censors opposition. Political violence is encouraged. Trump is banned from social media. So that's your list of things as you write down your evidence. Let me conclude quickly here. They were led down some rabbit holes, but they are absolutely right that their government is monopolized by a regime that believes they are beneath representation. Okay, that concludes my discussion as it relates to this Twitter feed, which has gone viral and talks about the situation. All right, so this is a situation report. Now, you can agree with everything or not. It doesn't matter. And in fact, I would suggest that we all write our own situation report. We find ourselves in a situation, in a aspect of reality that is very, very strange. We have been given a lot of things that others want us to believe. Okay, keep that in mind. That is ought to be the first warning sign that we get. Do others actually want us to believe such and such? Or are they allowing us to make up our own minds? That is the key. Okay, one more. I'm gonna run this short audio clip of a recent speech by Joe Biden, and he is talking about voting rights and the voting rights legislation that is going on in certain states. And we're going to use this as a case in point as we continue our discussion about the truth algorithm. All right, so let's listen to this and let's see if we can understand it from a truth and critical thinking standpoint. All right, here goes.
No other election has ever been held under such scrutiny and such high standards. The big lie is just that, a big lie. The 2020 election, it's not hyperbole, suggests the most examined and the fullest expression of the will of the people in the history of this nation. This should be celebrated. An example of America at its best. But instead, we continue to see an example of human nature at its worst, something darker and more sinister. In America, if you lose, you accept the results. You follow the Constitution. You try again. You don't call facts fake and then try to bring down the American experiment just because you're unhappy. That's not statesmanship. That's not statesmanship. That's selfishness. That's not democracy. It's the denial of the right to vote. It suppresses, it subjugates. The denial of full and free and fair elections is the most un-American thing that any of us can imagine. The most undemocratic, the most unpatriotic, and sadly, not unprecedented. From denying enslaved people full citizenship until the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments after the Civil War, to denying women the right to vote until the 19th Amendment 100 years ago, to poll taxes and literacy tests and the Ku Klux Klan campaigns of violence and terror that lasted in the 50s and 60s, to the Supreme Court decision in 2013, and then again just 2 weeks ago, a decision that weakened the landmark Voting Rights Act, to the willful attacks, election attacks in 2020, and then to a whole other level of threat, the violence and the deadly insurrection on the Capitol on January 6th. I just got back from Europe, speaking to the G7 and the NATO. They wonder, not a joke, they wonder, Gov, they ask me, is it going to be okay? The citadel of democracy in the world, is it going to be okay? Time and again, we've weathered threats to the right to vote, free and fair elections. And each time, we found a way to overcome. That's what we must do today.
Okay, so when you listen to this, we're hearing words that suggests a certain thing, a certain aspect of reality. When you hear things like free and fair elections and the challenge to democracy and the undemocratic behavior and all kinds of things in terms of, and also there is a quite a long monologue there by Joe Biden about accepting the outcome of an election. And this was not done when Trump was elected to the presidency in 2016. This was not done, all right? So the first order of business here is to ask yourselves, is this call for acceptance, is this genuine, is this honest, or is it... a ruse? I'm looking for a term here that means it's dishonest.
Propaganda.
My audio engineer is saying, he's saying propaganda. I can't find the word, but I'm trying to locate it. It's hypocritical. I finally got it. All right, is it hypocritical? All right, I would suggest here that, you know, and we should take this very, very seriously. I would suggest here that it is in fact hypocritical. This was not done. This has not been done across the board. So for somebody to bring this to the table as justification when a few short years ago the tables were turned and they would not accept the election of President Trump, then I think that, you know, that we've lost all credibility here. All right, I've got one other important audio clip here to. I can see that I'm running out of time here, but I do want to squeeze this in, and this is all part of what we're trying to get at. The title of this is "How to Stop Being a Coward." This is about taking charge of your ability to think. Do not allow anyone else to think for you. All right, so let's do this. Yes. Oh, my audio engineer says I had Jordan Peterson next. All right, so let's play Jordan Peterson now. Sorry, I got confused. All right. So let's do Jordan Peterson now. That's a better choice. I got a little mixed up here with the sequence. So let's play the Jordan Peterson lecture on truth. This is the better choice for this show.
Right. In order to find your way through all of that, you need to develop a relationship with something that's profound. And you can You have that capacity. And what could be more profound than the truth? And what would you rather have on your side? And to do more than your best, because your best isn't enough, because your best isn't as good as you could be. You have to push yourself past that. And that's, as far as I can tell, where you find what you need in life. You find the meaning that sustains you in life, and you find the patterns of action that redeem the world. Nietzsche said that you could tell much about a man's character by how much truth he could tolerate, which is very interesting. You know, there's an idea in the great Western tradition that the truth is the way and the path of life, and that no one comes to the Father except through the truth. And I believe that to be the case, because I don't think that you can manifest who you are without the truth. And so I think it's literally and metaphorically truth, that the pathway to who you could be if you were completely who you were is through the truth. And so the truth does set you free, but the problem is that it destroys everything that isn't worthy in you as it sets you free, and that's a process of burning. And it's painful, because you cling to what you shouldn't be, partly out of pride and partly out of ignorance and partly out of laziness. And so then you encounter something true. And you all know this. You all know this perfectly well, because when was the last time that you learned something important that wasn't a blow of some sort, you know? And it's often you look back at your life and you think, oh, God, I really learned something there. I wouldn't want to do that again, but it really changed my life. I mean, sometimes it can really destroy you, you know, an encounter with the truth, and you never really recover. But now and then something comes along and straightens you out, and a lot of you has to go. A lot of you has to burn away, you know, and I suppose in some sense the idea is that everything about you that isn't worthy is to be put into the flames. And that's another reason to be not so casual about claiming what you believe, because it isn't something that you undertake without due caution. You know, I learned when I was a kid, about 25 or so, a little older than a kid, that almost everything that I said was one form of lie or another. And I wasn't any worse, I would say, than the people that I was associating with, or any better. And the lies were manifold, you know, they were attempts to win arguments for the sake of winning the argument. That might be one. Attempts to indicate my intellectual prowess when there were competitions of that sort. Maybe just the sheer pleasure of engaging in an intellectual argument and winning. My inability to distinguish between ideas that I had read and incorporated because I had read but hadn't realized that I hadn't yet earned the right to use all of that. And, you know, I had this experience that lasted a long time. Well, I would say it's really never gone away. And I think this was the awakening of my conscience, essentially. This voice, for lack of a better word, made itself manifest inside me, and it said every time I said something that wasn't true, and that's usually what it said. That's not true. You don't believe that. Or there was a sensation that was associated with it. I don't think this is that uncommon, you know. I asked my psychology classes for many years in a row if they had an experience, this experience, that they had a voice in their head, let's say, it's a metaphor, or a feeling that communicated to them when they were about to do something wrong. And it was universally the case that people agreed with one of those statements or another. And the other thing I would ask is, well, do you always listen to it? And of course, the answer to that was definitely no. Well, you know, I learned that so much of what I was doing was false. And I think I learned this. See, there was a reason that this came to me so clearly. I was trying to understand why people did terrible things. And I was really concentrating on the terrible, terrible things that people do. And I was interested in Auschwitz, for example. And And not as a political phenomenon, but as a psychological phenomenon. I was curious about how you could be an Auschwitz guard. And I wasn't really curious about how you could be one, because, well, you could be one, that, of course. I was more curious about how I could be one, being such a good person as I thought I was. But I also knew that many people did many terrible things during the 20th century, and the idea that I was somehow better than them, or that I should assume a priori that I was better than them, and that I wouldn't have made the same choices or worse had I been in the same situation, was a very, very, very dangerous supposition. And that we really needed to understand why it happened, and that perhaps we could go deep enough in that understanding, which is, I think, what happens when you go deep into understanding, so that you could stop it. Because if you understand a problem, maybe you can solve it. You know, and at least in part, I came to believe that the problem was, as Solzhenitsyn said, that the problem is that the line between good and evil runs down every human heart. And I was reading Jung at the same time, you know, and he believed that the human soul was a tree whose roots grew all the way to hell, and believed also that in the full investigation of the shadow, which was the dark side of the human psyche, was that it was bottomless, essentially, that it was like an experience of hell. And that also struck me as true. And that the way to stop those sorts of things from happening was to stop yourself from being the sort of person who would do it, who would even start to do it. Because the other thing you learn when you learn about atrocities of that sort, for me, it was a matter of understanding that the way to stop such things from happening, the way to remember properly, is to understand that you could do it, that you could do those terrible things, because the people who did them were like you. And that the way out of that is to stop being like that. And the way you stop being like that is by ceasing to tell yourself lies that you don't believe in, and that you know you shouldn't act out. And, you know, and that's made a huge difference in my life, for better or for worse. I mean, it was a very uncanny experience, I would say, because it's very discombobulating to experience yourself as fragmented enough so that much of what you do and say is actually false. It's a lot of work to clean that up, a lot. But the consequences are, in principle, worthwhile. And so that was part of what drove me towards clinical psychology, say, and away from political science and law and from politics in general, because I started to believe that, and I think this is the great Western idea, the proper route forward for the redemption of the individual and for mankind as a whole is as a consequence of the redemption of each individual. And I truly believe that. And I believe that that occurs as a consequence of adherence to the truth and courage in the face of being. That's rule one, right? Stand up straight with your shoulders back, is to take on the onslaught and to enter the contentious ring and to do more than your best, because your best isn't enough, because your best isn't as good as you could be. You have to push yourself past that. And that's, as far as I can tell, where you find what you need in life. You find the meaning that sustains you in life, and you find the patterns of action that redeem the world, both at the same time. I mean, life is a very difficult business. You know, it's fatal, and it's full of suffering, and it's full of betrayal and malevolence. There's nothing about it that's trivial. It's all profound. And in order to find your way through all of that, that capacity for hellish experience, let's say, you need to develop a relationship with something that's profound. And you can. You have that capacity. And what could be more profound than the truth? And what would you rather have on your side? And you might say, well, that's obvious. And of course, everyone should do that. And then you need to know why you don't. And the answer is, well, the burns are still healing. It's like, well, you know, there's no shortage of deadwood to burn off. And there's no shortage of pain when the deadwood burns off. And that's what makes people afraid of the truth. And so, what's the decision that you make? You know, you decide to believe. You know, it's a risk, an existential risk. It's an act of faith. You believe that the truth can set you free. You believe that people have an intrinsic divinity about their soul. You decide that you're going to live in that manner and that you're going to let everything about yourself that isn't worthy of that goal die. And that might be almost everything that you are. And that's a terrible thing to contemplate. The only thing that's worse, I would say, is the alternative. Because the alternative is the sorts of hells that we manage to produce around us and that we produced with particular expertise during the totalitarian regimes of the 20th century. And it would be a good thing if we decided collectively and individually not to go back there again. Thank you.
Okay. I got a couple of minutes here. First of all, George, it's always worthwhile in my mind to spend some time listening to Jordan Peterson, reading his books, which I have done. He has a YouTube channel, video podcast that he has up and running. And it's always, I think, enlightening and refreshing. I like the way he thinks. I like the way he considers things. My position is similar to Jordan Peterson's. And my suggestion, which I do myself, is to spend some time every day trying to grasp the meaning of what is true. What can we do as a conscious, thinking human being? What can we do to help us understand what is true, what is real, and embrace the truth? Someone said to me recently that they lead with integrity. That is a good thing to do. That is great advice. It happened to be my film producer who said that to me recently. That is what I try to do every day. I would suggest that we all do that. Let's embrace the truth. Let's lead with integrity. Let's determine once and for all that we are capable of deciding what exactly is the truth, what is true. All right. I can see we're at, by the noise, the sound, the music, the wonderful music, I can see that we are at the conclusion of another Throttle Up radio show and podcast. See you all next week.